But first, time to recap the top news stories from February.
We just wanted to create a budget. We wanted to stay within our available revenue, but we also knew there were some big issues that we needed to tackle.
Well, I think when we take a look at the overall budget, it's a mixed bag.
And I do believe that Detroit is fixable and that it can see brighter days ahead in the near future.
I want to emphasize, we support the no-fault system here in Michigan. We think it's the right public policy for our consumers.
Rates are too high and reform is needed. What we disagree on is how that reform should look.
I think that's probably why Benedict is resigning, that his doctors told him he can't travel.
This is about covering people. Now it's incumbent on us to cover them efficiently in terms of better care at a lower cost.
I'm right on board. You know, I've been an advocate for not cutting K-12 and better funding for pre-K.
Obviously, again, if Michigan State wants to win the Big Ten, I mean, the Spartans have to win all their home games.
Two top 10 teams. I mean, how often has that happened here in ever? Surprise, surprise.
We do not like having that building in the neighborhood, its impact on our property values and quality of life. My 100-year-old, three-story house could fit inside.
A lot happened this month, and with me to help sort through it all is a distinguished panel of journalists. Joining me, Rick Pluta, is the State Capitol Bureau Chief and Managing Editor of the Michigan Public Radio Network. Kyle Malin is the News Editor of the Michigan Information and Research Service, or MIRS. And Andy Belaskovitz is the Managing Editor for the Lansing City Pulse. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi, Angela. It's, you know, congratulations on your first guest hosting stint. And this is probably the wrong time to let you know that Kyle has taken a one-hour vow of silence.
I swallowed my tongue. You weren't supposed to say anything about that.
To be fair, there is also a baby in here, so we are really flying.
That's no way to talk about Kyle.
All right, guys, let's get at it. First of all, Lambert Edwards and Associates released a poll yesterday that found that 53% of likely voters believe Rick Snyder leans hard right or slightly right. That's only because, or I'm sorry, of course, that's only news because so many voters thought he was a moderate. Guys, are these results surprising, and what does it mean for his reelection bid? Kyle?
Well, I think it was surprising because he was elected as a moderate, wasn't he? And to see that only 15% now identify him as such is a little surprising, but he just signed Right to Work. I mean, you can't get any more right than that. You know, he also signed abortion language. There really hasn't been much that he hasn't signed outside of that Blue Cross bill. That had some offensive abortion language in it, too, and he did veto the gun bill, but really, I think he has exceeded people's expectations as far as being a conservative.
So if you're a Republican, you've probably been pleasantly surprised. Democrats, not so much.
Well, you know what, though? The Tea Party folks would probably disagree with that.
Well, you asked about the results. The results are not surprising and not terribly important this far out from the election.
Andy, one of the results I found interesting, 10% of the 600 respondents said they believe Snyder leans left. What can you think of that would prompt anyone to say he's leaning left?
It's interesting. As Kyle said, he went so far to the right on Right to Work, and now he comes out with these these fairly significant calls for tax increases to fix roads. So I think, you know, he goes one way pretty far, and then he seems to go the other way pretty far.
Yeah, I mean, with Rick Snyder, it really seems like no matter who you are, there's something to hate there, which is not a great place for a politician to be. But you've got Right to Work, which is sort of the holy grail of, you know, conservative politics. And so that actually, you know, covered over in some respects kind of a multitude of sinning according to, you know, doctrinaire conservatives. But yeah, at the same time that, you know, the tax reforms that took place early in the administration were kind of a mishmash, that the governor just seemed a little bit too cozy with Obamacare for the comfort of a lot of Tea Partiers, that we're actually seeing, you know, just the latest incarnation of that fight playing out right now in terms of the Medicaid expansion and also setting up a state-federal health care exchange. Maybe we can talk more about that later. But
let's talk about it now, Rick.
Oh, okay.
House Appropriations Chair Joe Hovman says the alternative to a state-run health care exchange would be a federal exchange with no state control. I believe we've got some audio here.
I know that people from my own party are criticizing what we've done, but believe me, this is the most conservative of the two choices that we could make. So although it may appear like it was a step in the wrong direction or endorsing Obamacare, this was the conservative vote. The other vote was the liberal vote to say we want the federal government to take us over.
Well, gentlemen, is this the conservative choice?
Well, that's the riddle, the enigma here, which is it's almost a question of what kind of a conservative are you? Are you an anti-federalist, you know, keep it with the states, push Washington off as far off as you can conservative, or are you a fiscal, the government spends too much of our money, whether they're spending it from Washington or in Lansing, because this is money, this is a grant from the federal government. The legislature rejected last year the idea of creating a state-run exchange. So the governor unilaterally made an agreement with the federal government to do a partnership exchange, and this would spend federal money from Washington to do that. And there are Tea Partiers who are saying, we don't care where it's from. It's taxpayer money, and you ought not be spending it. And by the way, you ought not be cooperating with Obamacare, this expansion of federal power.
Is this a losing battle that conservatives are fighting against Obamacare, Kyle Miller?
Which conservatives?
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know what really struck me about this was the pivot that the House Republicans have done. This is 180 degrees from what we've been hearing out of that caucus for the last year and a half. You know, they spiked an idea to approve $9.8 million to do the exact same thing, not 3 months ago. I mean, this was a smaller amount back then to do basically the same thing. And now I think the only thing's changed really is a couple new members and a new appropriations chair. Maybe that's all they really needed here.
Two other things changed: a Supreme Court decision and an election where the president of the United States was overwhelmingly reelected. And
well, I'm talking about since December, though.
Okay, but what's happened here is you've got a group of Republicans who are saying we need to make the best of this. And another group of Republicans, basically inspired by the Tea Party, saying like, "No, we are taking, the war is not over. We are taking this guerrilla warfare into the hills, and we are going to continue battling Obamacare until our last breath."
And to that point, some Tea Party folks are saying this is a scorecard vote.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Now, that's got to create a little bit of uncertainty for local governments who are trying to figure out how their own healthcare plans fit into this larger federal ideal. Andy Blaskovich,
and businesses
City Pulse.
And,
what is happening now locally with, say, the Ingham County Health Plan? How is that driving with Obamacare?
Well, I think the Ingham Health Plan is trying to fill in some gaps there locally here, and it's gotten some voter support last fall, and I think there's still going to be more to come out of the county as far as covering uninsured people in the area here.
Excellent. Well, Governor Snyder also made news yesterday for something he did, appointing a new Supreme Court justice to replace former Justice Diane Hathaway, who resigned amid a scandal. What do we know about Macomb County Judge David Viviano? I did see yesterday that at least one Democrat, Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle, is a fan. But is this a surprise, and is this a best-case scenario for Dems, Kyle Mullen?
Well, you know what? It was a surprise, but the more that we learned about David Viviano, the more it kind of made sense. This is a judge from Macomb County who's run in competitive elections before, and that's what you need for this post. He's going to have to run again to keep this seat in 14. He's going to have to run again in 16. So he's had to run in a prominently, it's a swing district, but it's a Democratic county there in Macomb. He's had to reach across the aisle. He got support from laborers in his run for judge. He got the support of Mark Hackle. And although he's run as a prosecutor before in Macomb County in 2004 as a Republican, he's kind of framed himself politically a little differently. He's from a family of prominent judges in the Viviano family there in Macomb County. He's young, 41 years old, which is very important. And he's the rule of law judge that Republicans and Rick Snyder have wanted all along. So I think kind of a perfect blend, really.
Well, you know, he's, in some respects, I have a suspicion. You know, he applied for this job, that he was not someone who they reached out to, that he expressed interest. And it seems like the more the nerd looked at this guy is that it seemed like he was almost looking into the mirror, that here was someone who was center-right, that you're right, Kyle, that it is really important just that you put someone in there, if you're making that appointment, that they can, you know, clear an election, that who has been vetted by voters in a in a swing region. He lost when he ran for prosecutor, but nevertheless that he's been through that experience. He's been vetted, but also he's very technology minded. That one of the things that helped him rise to the top was, I guess, whenever the Supreme Court has talked about, you know, one of these, you know, court overhauls, e-filing, new jury rules, things like that, that Judge Viviano has been one of the people who stood up and said that we'll do this. And so, you know, here's someone, when he talks about, you can talk about him being a rule of law judge, but when he talks about stuff that excite him, he talks about, you know, creating universal electronic filing for, you know, for courtrooms.
Stuff, right?
Yeah, and that is the sort of thing that makes you know, Rick the Nerd Snyder's heart beat just a little bit faster.
All right, guys, biggest stories in February. Let's start with you, Andy. What was the biggest story in February for you?
Well, I think statewide and both locally, you can't forget about medical marijuana. There was a Supreme Court ruling that basically shut down dispensaries, most of them in the city. There's still a few out there as of a few weeks ago. But you also have movement in the legislature from Republican Representative Mike Calton, who is suggesting local units of government be able to make the decision whether they want dispensaries in their towns, which and it looks like he's got some pretty strong bipartisan support already just by who's co-sponsored his bill. So it'll be interesting to see how that fares in the legislature.
So will we finally get an answer to whether and how medical marijuana is legal in Michigan? Any chance of that happening soon at all?
Ever? Well, that was kind of an interesting development because Representative Calton sponsored almost the exact same legislation last year and it went nowhere, no co-sponsors. And he says what he thinks changed is that he went back to his conservative West Michigan district. He ran for re-election and his voters said, you know, we're okay with this. And so now you've got a bipartisan group of conservative, you know, libertarian. Libertarian-leaning Republicans, liberal, you know, sort of, you know, pro-medical marijuana Democrats who are coming on board to try and make this happen. And it also deals with, you know, one of the issues hanging out there with the medical marijuana law is what do you do with people's extra dope? That, you know, it's as Kyle knows very well, that growing your own marijuana is not an exact science.
Thanks, Rick.
So they're going to be knocking on your door now.
Yeah, they're already there.
But that you're supposed to just destroy your overage. But the concern is that, in fact, you know, when people grow extra, it's not being destroyed. And so dispensaries actually create a place where you can drop it off, that you can distribute it and you can actually follow it.
You know what also I think is important too is where do these elderly folk get their medical marijuana? It's not like they know Joe on the corner or they know somebody, you know, who's hanging out at the club who knows how to, you know, who's making
their
own
dope.
Yeah,
there are a lot more people who have signed up for this than who can find a provider to grow it.
So there's a legitimate demand issue,
well,
is what we're saying here.
Yeah, there's an access issue. How are these older folks who have glaucoma, have terminal cancer, who can really benefit from something that is not so toxic as medical marijuana, how are they supposed to get this stuff? And I think that's a problem that the legislature is struggling with and something Republicans understand needs to be solved.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kyle, what was your biggest story of the month for February?
You know, I thought that Governor Snyder suggesting that Medicaid be expanded to a higher swath of low-income people was very significant because Republicans, as we talked about earlier, have been banging on Obamacare and saying that it's, you know, the federal takeover of everything and of health care here. And for him to go out in front before his budget presentation, say, I support this. This is something we got to care about these individuals, and then make the economic case for it, and saying that this actually will save money for the state down the road. I thought that was very significant, and not maybe what you would expect out of a Republican
now,
governor.
What's the political impact, or the I guess the political fallout for any conservatives who decide that this is the hill they're going to die on? I mean, will we see blowback in the next election cycle?
Oh, I think you would. I think you will see Tea Party opposition to maybe some of these folks in the terms of a challenge. And that's something they got to keep in mind. You know, I mentioned earlier that the support for that $30 million grant to do the exchange as a scorecard vote, I got to imagine this is going to be a scorecard vote too for many Tea Party folks. And if you're a Republican, you don't want to get challenged to the right because you open yourself up for a loss.
Now, Rick, your biggest story in February.
My biggest story is also the governor coming behind the Medicaid expansion. But he didn't do this all by himself. That we're seeing, you know, this group of Republican governors, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie being the most recent, to come on board with the Medicaid expansion. And I don't think it was a surprising thing for Rick Snyder to do, just because he has been a lot more sanguine about Obamacare than a lot of other Republicans, much to the consternation of a lot of other Republicans. And so, but Kyle is right in that this has become sort of the new battlefield for the Tea Party to try to test its continued influence over Republican politics.
A couple of years ago, what we saw mostly was a lot of Republican attorneys general and some governors sort of teaming up to combat Obamacare and other such things. That seems to be happening in reverse now. Is this a new trend? I mean, is the Tea Party losing their sway?
Well, I think practicality is kind of coming into play here. I think folks realize, and Joe Hoffman said yesterday, the probes chair said, look, we already tried this battle. We lost at the elections. We lost at the courts. You got to kind of look at what we're really going to be doing here. You know,
this is a settled question. We now need to move on
with
the world as it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to kind of figure this out and make the best out of a bad situation. I think I saw Mike Shirky's line. We got to make chicken soup out of chicken poop.
And Mike Shirky is a conservative icon in the Michigan legislature because he's the guy who sponsored the right to work law. That his conservative cred is impeccable.
Excellent. All right, guys, let's move on to the most overlooked stories for February. Let's start with you, Andy Belaskov at City Pulse.
All right. Well, I'll stay locally here, and we've been following this big development at the old Red Cedar Golf Course at the border of Lansing and East Lansing. And it's so interesting because you have guys like Virge Bernero, Joel Ferguson, Pat Lindemann, all working together on this project.
Working together might be a stretch, correct?
It might be a stretch, yeah. And, you know, we want to know what is going on. When the voters approved the sale of additional acreage in November, the mayor said this is going into warp speed. Here we are six months later, and nothing really seems to be happening. And Pat Lindemann, the drain commissioner, is really starting to get vocal about it and really wants to know what's going on in the mayor's office.
Now, I also have been following this, and what I've been told from everyone is just hold tight, something big is coming. Are you hearing the same thing?
Yeah, we're hearing the same thing, but, you know, I think there are some undercurrents there that also aren't, you know, particularly out in the open. And, you know, Pat has said that the city basically wants to control a lot of the infrastructure projects going on there, whether it's for political gain or what have you. But he doesn't think it can happen. The Bernero administration says that's ridiculous. We're not trying to do that. We're just taking our time. So
definitely stay tuned on that one. Rick, biggest story that we didn't pay enough attention to in February?
I think that in some respects, the Republican convention last weekend got a bit overlooked just because there was so much attention focused on the Democratic convention and that really ferocious fight for party chair that the Tea Party came, you know, within just a few points of unseating an incumbent chair who's supported by the sitting governor of the party.
So there was almost sort of a coup d'etat, huh?
I mean, it got some attention, but again, you know, just what was happening in Detroit last weekend with the Democrats was just so loud that in some respects, I think it crowded out what would have been a lot of discussion that would have been there otherwise about what happened at the Republican convention.
And Kyle Malin with MER is your biggest story your most overlooked story of the month in February.
Well, I'm going to go across the state to Detroit at the Democratic convention. It wasn't the party chair race. I think that got considerable attention. I think it's the fact that the Democrats have no real candidate for governor right now. That is just absolutely amazing. If you go back 4 years ago, John Cherry had made it well known at that convention and otherwise that he was going to run for governor that year. Now, ultimately, he didn't. And, you know, we know what happened there. But the Democrats not only don't have a candidate, candidate for governor, but who are they going to run for the U.S. Senate if Carl Levin retires, which is a very real possibility. The bench isn't looking too good. All they're getting are a bunch of no's right now. Debbie Stabenow, Gretchen Whitmer, Mark Schauer is likely a no. Dan Kildee's a no. I mean, the no's just keep piling up, and I guess John Austin, the Board of Education chair, is president, is still keeping his mind open there, but there isn't a big bench here for the Democrats.
And don't forget, there's also the other statewide state offices, Secretary of State, Attorney General. We are seeing someone who's interested in that. But
the AG race, yeah.
Yeah, but people just aren't clamoring to jump into those.
You know, you usually see at these conventions at least somebody going around making their mark, you know, saying the right things, getting people excited. And we saw that in Gary Peters. But Gary Peters just won a seat in a very competitive congressional election. Now, he could be a very real possibility for the Carl Levin seat, but for governor, I'm not so sure. You always hear once you get a taste of the Potomac, you don't want to go back to the Grand. And I think that there may be quite a bit of that for Peters, even though he sought this position in 2002.
Now, looking ahead to March, what are the biggest stories? What's coming up? Andy?
Well, I'll be looking at city council races here in Lansing. I think it seems to be well accepted that Verge, if he does run for a third term as mayor, that he'll coast right in there. But his opponents are lining up, particularly in the northwest Lansing ward, fourth ward, where, and there's also some implications here, I think, for Verge, that if he loses, first of all, his three big supporters on council are up for re-election, and if one of them goes, he's looking at a 6-2 minority, which means he might lose some veto power in the future. So I think there's some big implications for the mayor, even though he looks safely for a third term.
Excellent. Rick, March, what's coming up?
I think that we could see some interesting policy fights in the legislature, but since March is the benchmark, I think the biggest story is March 1st, when we expect then or shortly after then the governor to make his decision on an emergency manager for the city of Detroit.
Excellent. And Kyle, what's on tap for you?
Well, I'm going to be taking a look at what the legislature comes up with the governor on this road funding question, because that is still out there right now. They are allegedly behind the scenes trying to concoct some formula everyone can agree on. They're not there yet, but there seems to be a real push to get this done sooner than later.
So there would be hope for our struggling potholes yet.
There could very well be, yes. Could be. I'm saying could be. I'm not saying yes.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining me on Current State. We've had Rick Pluta, the State Capitol Bureau Chief and Managing Editor of the Michigan Public Radio Network. Kyle Millen, the News Editor of the Michigan Information and Research Service, MERS, not MERS. That's a space station. And Andy Belaskovitz, the Managing Editor for the Lansing City Pulse. Guys, thanks again.
Flynn Millen cooing in the background.
Coughing, too, I think.